Welcome to the Soulful Podcast. I am your host, Megan Harmony, a champion at overcoming the tough stuff and enjoying life while rising above it. Soulful living means getting to a place of ease and comfort, no matter what's happening around you. It is waking up excited about what adventures you will go on. It's connecting to the power within you as your source of strength, grace, and security. It's being uncomfortable during growth spurts and leaning into the stretch. Each week, I will share with you about my journey and the experiences I have had. I'll offer you hope and inspiration that it is possible to live a full life, even when the you-know-what is hitting the fan. I believe that love is a language we can all understand, and I want to inspire you to trust and believe in yourself. Your soul is hungry for more. Lean in to get soul full. Hi, family and friends. Happy Monday. So I have quite the treat for you this week. I am sharing in this week's episode one of my speaker talks from a meeting I attended a while ago. I'm hoping it'll help you to better understand me and who I am, as well as what addiction and alcoholism really is. So stay tuned, but first your card readings. The first card is from the Keepers of the Light Oracle cards by Kyle Gray. Freya, phases and cycles. There is a beginning within every ending. Illusions are revealed and released. Freya, which means lady, is the Norse goddess of the moon and love. She is the twin flame of Odin and a warrior goddess who offers deep spiritual and physical protection to those who call on her. She will stand before you with her shield and spear, keeping you safe from harm. She works closely with moon energy and helps us recognize that our life is a cycle that is always changing. She herself is the maiden, the mother, and the crone aspect of all women and guides them to see the wisdom these cycles bring. We all go through phases and cycles of growth, and Freya is the energy that supports this. She has a raven spirit totem, which is said to represent her capacity to travel between heaven and earth. A phase of your life may be coming to an end, but it's important to acknowledge it's not the end. When one door closes, another opens. You may have been desperate for change, but now that it's here, you could feel vulnerable. Know that the mighty goddess Freya will guide you. Illusions are now being revealed so that you can leave behind anything that is false. Step into your peaceful warrior-like energy and welcome the changes you deserve. Tie up all loose ends and take heart. This is an exciting time. And the next card is from the Lightworker Oracle deck by Alana Fairchild. And the card is Alchemical Mutation. Your spiritual growth is changing your mind, body, and soul. It is very real. It is helping you fulfill all aspects of your divine destiny. It is awakening spiritual talents and attracting in new energies. This process will bring tremendous joy and satisfaction. The body changes as light enters. Alchemy is catalyzed and transformation happens. Sometimes, the appearance of the body changes. There will be change in how the body feels, responds, acts, and creates. Radiance increases. Lightness of being increases. If you have clairvoyant vision, you will see the increase in light, as though the person is actually lit up from within. They are. Spiritual abilities become grounded in the body, and the person can channel healing energy just as naturally as they would set the dinner table. The spirit becomes a living reality in the body, and the material world is experienced as an extension of the divine light. This alchemy is an empowering gift of love. Symptoms of this process can at times be challenging. They may include headaches and other aches and pains, flu-like symptoms, and inexplicable and nearly overwhelming fatigue that lasts for days, and then suddenly vanishes along with a surge of new energy. We may also experience pinging in the ears, increased sensitivity to light or sound, hormonal imbalance and hot flashes, excessive sexual energy, mental obsessions or mood swings, aggression, and unintentionally harsh reactions to people. If you have been experiencing any of the above and wondered if these or other unusual symptoms could be a direct result of increased spiritual energy affecting the body, then the answer is that this is very likely. You are encouraged to source whatever professional health support you need to take care of your body. Also consider using the following simple practices to ease away the side effects of divine alchemy taking place in you. These simple practices include getting regular rest. Additional sleep is a powerful way for the body and mind to heal and repair, integrate and reorganize. Allow time for physical exercise, which can help release excess energy, especially if you tend to feel mentally congested. Take some time away from meditation, spiritual studies, or discussions, and energy work. Instead, simply be in nature or rest. If you work with colors, then take a break for a short time, only working with very soft, subdued white or colorless light. If you have a tendency to push yourself with spiritual work, learning to take time off on regular occasions will help you recover more quickly and suffer less. Finally, working with cooling energy, not cold, but refreshing, as a way to discharge excess heat, can be extremely beneficial to body and mind. You can do this by sitting in the shade or in a room that feels cool and relaxing, or even by cooling your hands before an air conditioner or fan, and then using your fingertips to transfer cool and healing energy by lightly touching your chest, back of neck, and back of your head, ears, and forehead. Your invocation for this week is, I call upon the beings that love me unconditionally and ask for divine grace, protection, information, assistance, intervention, and healing in all ways now, as I change alchemically. May my body and mind be supported and recover with divine assistance. I celebrate the alchemy that the light creates, and with kindness, I allow for it to unfold in my body, mind, and soul according to the guiding hand of divine love. May all those on the path of love and light be assisted to walk their path with as much joy and as little suffering as possible. Through my own free will and divine grace, so be it. I just want to give you guys a quick reminder to please come find me in the Souls Unleashed Facebook group, where I'll be dropping more and more information and channeling and different things each week. And it's a great place for a community, a sacred community, where you can really belong. And now for the speaker talk. Have a fabulous week, you guys.
All right. Hi, family and friends. I am a grateful member of Cocaine Anonymous, and I recovered as of March 3rd, 2010. I want to start off by thanking Gord for asking me to speak tonight. It's an honor to be at your celebration. As Gord said, we met 2.5 years ago. I was speaking at an event, and he came up to me after, and he just complimented me and made my head this big and my ego huge and told me how wonderful of a talk it was. But I know for him, because we've become friends since then, it impacted him. And the beautiful thing about that is I have no idea what I said that day, because when I get in front of you guys and share my story, I ask my higher power to speak through me and tell you what you need to hear, not what I think you need to hear. Because if I tell you what I think you need to hear how wonderful I was and how amazing I am and how my life was just golden, and it's all a whole load of bullshit. It's me telling you what I think you need to hear to like me and feel good about me, because even though I've got a few years clean and sober, my ego can still come into play and try and run the show. And it's not usually pretty when that happens. Might look pretty, but it's not pretty. It's Meg's hair on fire, and I leave a destruction and wake behind me when I show up like that. But let's not start there. Let's start at the beginning, because my job is to share with you guys hope, faith, and courage. My life was average. It was a good life. My parents were wonderful. They did wonderful things for me. I could tell you that they got divorced when I was three, and my name is Megan Harmony, and they named me Harmony because their life was in perfect harmony when I was born. And because they got divorced at three, that's why I'm an addict. But it's not. I could tell you that I'm an addict because at the age of five, I got juvenile diabetes and had to start taking needles every day, three times a day to survive. But that's not why I'm an addict. All these reasons that I had before that were my excuses for picking up substances are not the reasons why I'm an addict. I'm an addict because when I put something in my system, I have an abnormal mind and body that wants as much of it as humanly possible, and that's not going to stop until all the money runs out, all the schemes run out to try and get more, all this other stuff. And then when that all ends, I have a mind that obsesses about it till the next time I get it. Now, I didn't know any of that till I came in here and met all you lovely people and you told me. And I didn't believe you when you told me, because I'm delusional 90% of the time. When I first come in here, I think I got this. I can stop. I stopped for the 9 months I was pregnant. Now, keep in mind, my partner at that time knew every drug dealer in the city and told them if they sold to me, he would kill them. And he meant it. But I stopped on my own, don't you know? And like, these are the lies that I told myself all the time. Now, in school, as a kid growing up, I was this perfectionistic kid. I think 99.9% of us are. It kind of goes with the territory of being an addict. We want everything a certain way, and I was a control freak. But I didn't know any of that back then. I didn't know that till I came in here and started doing inventory and found out that when my dad broke my inner tube in the pool when I was three, and at 16, I was still bringing it up to him that he broke my Mickey Mouse inner tube, that's a resentment that I held on to till 26. At 16, my dad took me to the pool shop to buy me a new one to shut me up, because I brought it up to him all the time. I'm like, you and your friends broke my inner tube, blah, blah, blah. And I threw these little hissy fits. But I didn't know I had an addict mind that held on to that resentment as one of those millions of reasons to get drunk or high. Because if I'm mad, it's a real at something so stupid as an inner tube, which I ended up doing inventory on in this and going to my dad and apologizing and making amends for, because I dragged him through hell over that for years. And you guys might sit here and think that's weird, and that's cool if you do, but those of you that are type 3 alcoholic addicts like me, you get it. Because you've been pissed off at the kid that stole your marbles in grade 3 and didn't give them back. Because that's what we do. It's the symptoms of this disease. But again, I didn't know any of that till somebody taught me. I really just, by the time I was about 20, I really just thought I was insane and my family should lock me up. Come in here and find out I am insane. But there's a reason for that. It's because I'm an addict. And if that's the reason, then there's a solution, because all these people in these rooms have this solution and they're on fire and they're excited and they want this amazing life. And I want what they want, but I don't believe any of them are telling the truth when I first walk through the door. Gordon didn't have 3 years if I was new tonight walking in the door. He's lying. He got high last night. That's the type of brain that I have. Luckily, it's not like that today. But it was when I came in. I thought every single person was lying. Nobody on the planet is that happy. They are just full of it, because it was so miserable when I came in here. So what happened? Let's go back a bit. My first substance taking, I was 12 years old. I had had a snowboard injury. We had a church function, and as you know, pews are like hard and wooden. And I was sitting in the pew and I was literally crying because of this snowboard injury to my tailbone. So my mom gave me a quarter or an eighth of a Percocet, because she had them for a back injury for herself. She was just trying to help me out, but I was like, zing, what are we going to do next, mom? And da, 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 da. Now again, at 12 years old, I didn't realize that was addict mentality. I didn't understand that 3 years would go by for me chasing that feeling of relief that I got from that Percocet. But I did. And the worst part was I was miserable, because I was trying to get that effect again of that zing. That relief, that, and what it really was for me, what I've learned is that presence. Because up until that point, my brain was always telling me I wasn't good enough, I didn't do enough, I didn't this, that, and the other. And it was always a squirrel cage up there. And the minute that substance went into my system, I was fully present in that moment with the people around me. Because that's the effect that substances give me. It shuts off the brain and allows me to just be. At first, it didn't stay that way. That's how it started. So 3 years later, I get my English exam back. I get 69 out of 70, because I'm a little brainiac, right? And One of my girlfriends says, well, aren't you a goody two-shoes brown noser? I'll show you. I'll hurt me. I went to the liquor store, got the creepy guy to buy me booze. I went to all my friends and got them to get hash oil. And I went to another friend's house whose mother didn't care what we did. And I decided I was just going to do what all these other teenagers were doing. It was normal teenage behavior at this point. I'm about 14, 15, 16, somewhere in there. I'm just going to have a few drinks and get high. Everybody else is doing it. What's the big deal? I took that first sip and it was like, I could talk to the guy I'd had a crush on forever. I could say what I wanted to say to people. I wasn't afraid anymore. It removed all my inhibitions and all that fear, because I'm driven by 100 forms of fear. It just removed all that. And I could do and be and say whoever I wanted to be with that booze in my system. And then add hash oil that night. And now I got the spins and life is fucking fantastic, even though it's not. But to me it was, because I had never felt like that before. I had never been able to be in my own skin and feel comfortable. And that night I did. So the next morning, I come to in my house, no idea how I got there. And I'm a diabetic and that's an alarm. So I'm gonna silence that. I apologize, guys. I can't turn the ringer off on that. It means that my blood sugar's off, sorry. I come to the next morning and I've taken an insulin needle and carved the word life sucks, S-U-X, because I can't spell when I'm drunk. And I've carved that into my arm to the point it was deep enough I had a scar for about 6 years. And I wake up and I come to and I look at my arm and I see this says life sucks. And I go, that was the best night of my life. I am going to do that again. Now, a normal human being who's not a type 3 alcoholic addict would look at their arm that they've self-harmed themselves with the words life sucks and have to wear long sleeves to cover it up and go, that's not normal. I don't think I'm going to do that again to myself. But I'm like, let's go. And for the next 10 to 15 years, that's exactly what I did. Let's go. Whatever I can get my hands on to make me feel better about me. Now, there were periods of time where I wasn't using substances, but I couldn't stop starting. There was always a reason to start. And anybody that wants to tell you there's such a thing as triggers, great, there are. It's everything. It's sunny. It's raining. I got a job. I got fired. I got the boyfriend. The boyfriend dumped me. All those are triggers. So I get really upset about certain things and I get really passionate about it. For me, the word trigger is a load of crap. If it works for you and your sponsor tells you there's triggers, your sponsor is right and I am wrong. But I'm telling you, for me, everything is a trigger. So it didn't matter what was happening in life. There was always a reason to start using again. Because all those things that I used to call triggers, because I did in early recovery, I had a sponsor told me this was a trigger and I did that. They were just my excuses to go do what had always worked for me. Alcohol and cocaine were my solution. They weren't the problem. Because if they were the problem, when friends would say to me, why don't you just stop? I would go, yeah, that's a good idea. And I would stop. But I couldn't stop because the problem's in my brain, which keeps telling me I need these substances to survive, and I keep going back to them, and I keep digging the hole deeper and deeper and deeper. And I would set lines in the sand for myself where I would say, well, if this happens, if I don't show up to work one day because I got drunk and high, I'm going to stop. But then I wouldn't show up for work that day, and then I would start again because, well, I didn't really mean that, or that wasn't really a good enough reason. And that continued on. And the substances would be interchanged. You know, there was a period with ecstasy. There was a period with, a long period with cocaine. But it didn't matter what the substance was. And I mean, for me, my addiction can show up in other ways too. The partner I'm with, I can get a big high off that. The job I have, because I can get relief from working too much. Shopping, the internet and social media, that can be a big one. And I share that with you guys because in my recovery, I have learned if I'm not working the spiritual disciplines that I've been taught to work, these things will show up where I'm scrolling on Facebook for 6 hours a day and the day's gone and I don't even know where it went. Now that hasn't happened recently, but we'll get to that. So what happened? Well, as I said, I got pregnant. The father protected me. She's 5 months old and she stops feeding off of me, so I go on a tear. I'm gone for about 5 days. She's with my mom. She's well cared for. And that was one of my lines was, well, I don't drink and drug with my child around. And the drugs kind of ceased a bit after she was born. I put them on hold, but the drinking catapulted, right? And 4 years go by. It's December 2009. I end up in eMERGE, clinically dead. Again, somehow I'm still here, so luckily they brought me back. God had more purpose for my life than I realized. But normal people would look at that scenario and go, I might have a problem with substances. Maybe. Maybe. I looked at that situation, heard the doctors telling me I had a problem with substances and that if I continued to drink and use drugs with my diabetes the way that I had been, I was going to be dead in a year. I looked at them and with full honesty said, I'm done. You're right. I believe you. I worked in a medical profession at the time, so I knew all the medical jargon they were giving me about my liver and my brain and my nasal cavity and all. They gave it all to me in medical terms, and I understood what they were saying. And I was done. I was never going to do this again. Firm resolution. And I know all you guys have made them. I'm never going to do this again. Next thing you know, week later, I'm drunk and high again. Friend came over to celebrate a promotion he got at work. We're only going to have two. I wake up the next morning. There's 360s, a case of beer, some 26ers, and I'm craving cocaine like I have never craved it before in my life. And at that point, I hadn't done it in a while, right? And I call up my buddy and I'm like, what happened last night? Oh, and that, sorry, add to that story. Don't know where my daughter is when I wake up because she was home that night. I've now crossed that line again, right? But this one, I can't really jimmy it and go, well, it's just okay or whatever. So I call my mom, who's now about 6 months sober, and I'm like, Mom, I need you to take my daughter. The booze has got a hold of me. I'll figure it out. So my mom starts caring for my kid, but I call my buddy, and I'm like, what happened? He's like, well, we did 2 8-balls of coke last night. Should have been dead. Statistically, I should be dead on more than one occasion. But keep in mind, this is a week after getting out of the hospital. Haven't done cocaine in a while. And I've just stuck 2 8-balls into my body. And somehow I'm still alive because God's grace protected me from me. It's the only reason. So at this point, I now feel like a failure as a mother. I'm on sick leave from my work. My car's parked in my driveway, but I can't drive it because it's broken. But I need that money to get the substances because, like, this is just the way I live my life. And I'm paying the hydro bill 1 month and the gas bill the next. And I'm stealing that money to get high and all this stuff. Like, it's just insane. But I think everybody lives this way because I don't know about you guys, but I associate with people that drink and use like me. Because if I hang out with the people that have two and start to feel it and then go home, I look like a freak. And I don't like to look like a freak. So I hang out with all the heavy users. They may not be type 3 alcoholic addicts, but they're heavy users, which are the worst for me because for them, they get engaged to get married to a nice guy or a nice girl, depending on their sex, and they can stop. Or the doctor gives them a warning like the doctor gave me, and they can stop. I don't have that power because I've lost the power of choice. I am going to go back to it every single time, even with every good reason not to. So in those few months after that hospitalization, there's one night, I go out to my mother's every night to tuck my daughter in, tell her I love her, and then I go home and get annihilated. This becomes my pattern because I don't know what else to do. The one night, I look at her, and she's got these tears in her eyes. 4-year-old, beautiful little girl. I love her with all my heart. I would die for her if I had to. This is my baby. And she's crying, Mommy, please don't go out tonight. Stay here. Because she's living at my mom's, right? I looked at her and I meant it. You could have put me on a lie detector when these words came out of my mouth and I would have passed the lie detector. I meant it with all my heart when I said, I will be here when you wake up in the morning. Come 9 p.m., walking out my mother's door, tears pouring down my face because I can't stop. I have to go get drunk and high because I don't know what else to do. And even though I love this kid, no human power can relieve my alcoholism and addiction. She is my everything. Again, take a bullet for her if I had to, but I can't stop. Absolutely can't. And I don't know why. I call it my spiritual reckoning. shortly after that, the doctor sent me away for Great Depression treatment, which I come to learn is untreated alcoholism and addiction. But at the time, I wasn't telling him how much I was drinking and using drugs, so it looked like depression. And while there, they made me do a daily intake test. Now, keep in mind, as I said, I was a bit of a brainiac when I was younger. I knew writing that test on a Sunday afternoon that I scored 200% on coke use and 200% on alcohol use because every question was a yes. And I decided God's grace brought me to a meeting that night because God put a really hot guy in the addictions program at the psychiatric hospital that I was in. God will use what it takes to get you there. He wasn't in my program, which was the mood and anxiety program, so he had to be in the addictions program, so I went to a meeting. And my first experience with meetings was not a CA meeting because they didn't have those at the facility I was at yet, but an older gentleman stuck out his hand like this and shook my hand and said, "Welcome home, kid." I had no idea how much that meant to me at the time because there's a lot of things. The lifestyle I lived, men weren't always the most respectful to me. I didn't command their respect either. I let men treat me the way they needed to treat me to get what I needed to get. But this gentleman shook my hand from a distance and I walked into that room. Well, I skipped, okay. So most people say they weren't skipping down the hall to a meeting. I literally was because I was like, "Hot guy, I'm gonna get my life together, it's gonna be great." And short and the long of it is, they started talking and for the first time ever in my life, people got me. And they thought like I thought, like the argument I had with my daughter's father years ago. And the next morning when he woke up and said, "Good morning," and I wanted to stab him in the eye with a sharp object because don't get coy with me after we're in a fight right now. They thought like that. When I shared that story with my coworker the day after it happened, she looked at me like I had three heads and was like, "You wanted to kill him because he said good morning?" I'm like, "Yeah." And when I come into a room of Cocaine Anonymous and I share that, you guys get it because you think like me. We're homicidal, suicidal, egomaniacs that will kill them, say we're going to kill ourselves, and then go, "Oh, but I love me too much. I'm not going to die." It's the way our brains work, right? So that was my first experience. So the short and the long of it is I did what they told me to do. They told me to get a sponsor, I got a sponsor. They told me to get a home group, I got a home group. They told me to take a service position, I became the candy girl because alcoholics, again, my hometown didn't have CA then. Alcoholics like candy, and Friday nights was a good meeting because Friday nights were tend to be my night to go out, so it kept me accountable. And the problem is nobody was telling me to work the steps. Unfortunately, the sponsor I had did the best she could, but and she was working the steps in a roundabout way, but like we were going for coffee every week and talking about my problems and staying stuck in the problem. And if I'm stuck in the problem, eventually I'm going to go back to what was my solution. Now, by God's grace, I haven't had a relapse. It's entirely God's grace. I had nothing to do with that. But God put the right people in my path at the right time to share with me what I needed to know. And I come from a line of sponsorship today where we are in this book left, right, and center. This is the big book. Mine's falling apart. If somebody's big book is falling apart, they're probably holding it together. So find them, stick with them. There's lines in my book. There's all this stuff because they took me through it and they taught me this stuff. And they weren't afraid to hurt my feelings. Far too often today, we're too worried about protecting the newcomer. And don't get me wrong, if you're new here, you're in the right place. But it's dangerous, I think, what a lot of us are doing, and I see it a lot, where we're not talking about the God aspect. And if you don't like the word God, spiritual being, higher power, source, divinity, whatever you need to call it, but this book a million different times tells me I have to have a spiritual experience to recover. That's the only thing that's going to work. But let's not talk about God at the meeting. What? And I see it all the time, and I guess that's why it's coming out right now, because it's dangerous. And it was dangerous for me in my early recovery because there was some talk about it, but it was around the bush. And I'm absolutely in love with God. God is my best friend. God is my lover. God dope is what I get when I pray and I meditate, and it's better than any high I've ever had. And the cool thing about it is he's the coolest dealer. Get this. All I have to do is ask and he shows up. I don't have to wait in a parking lot. I don't have to pay him. And he loves me unconditionally. Now that's my God. If your God doesn't love you unconditionally, you might want to get a new God, but hey, that's up to you. My God absolutely loves me and provides for me. Now, does that mean my life is all roses and... Does that mean my life is all rainbows and butterflies? No, it doesn't. Recovery is not always easy. It can be, but it's not always, because it doesn't mean, like, I came in and thought I was going to get sober and life would go my way. Doesn't work that way. Doesn't work that way at all. There's been a lot of things that have happened. Now, my life blew up after that. I ended up with a loving partner. He lived in Barrie, actually, and I lived in Chatham, and he ended up getting a job near me, and he moved down there, so I was living with the love of my life. I got the job I had hated prior to recovery. I started loving because I was helping people, and I got full-time employment. My daughter got on the bus one day. I was about 2 years sober, and she looked back, and she said, "I know you're going to be here when I get home, Mom." She trusted me again. That kid hadn't trusted me her entire life, and I'd never given her a reason to, but 2 years sober, she started to again. All these gifts were coming. All these amazing things were happening in my life. Problem was, I let up on the spiritual program of action that they teach us about. All those things were taken away. Not by my God, by my ego. At the job, I got injured. Life-altering injury. I can't do that job anymore. The partner had some of his own concerns, and he ended up moving away. My daughter ended up very, 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 very sick. She, not physically sick, mentally sick. She got bullied, and it didn't go well, and we'll get into that more. But because I let up on all those things, all these things started happening, and I didn't see how I am the maker of my own problems. I create all my problems today. My big book tells me that when trouble comes, cheerfully capitalize it as a chance for God to show his omnipotence. I'm paraphrasing, but I wasn't cheerfully capitalizing any of that when it was happening. I was mad. I was telling God to F off. I didn't want to be in recovery anymore, and I was just mad. Now, the good news is, why didn't I use? Because I have a line of sponsorship and friends, some of whom are in this room, that could see Megan was off the beam, and that's where the fellowship part is so important. They could see I was in trouble, and they came to me, and they said, "You okay, Megs?" Some I was honest with. Some I said, "I'm getting through." 3 years ago to tomorrow, I got a phone call. I was at a Super Bowl party at the treatment center, and they were doing the chili cook-off, and I got a call from somebody I absolutely love, and he said, "Meg, I'm okay." He'd been on a relapse recently, and he called to let me know he was okay, and he was getting back to meetings the next day. 3 days later, he was dead. I share that with you because that was my spiritual reckoning. I could tell at that moment I was headed down the exact same path he was on. I was barely praying. I was barely meditating. I was hardly going to meetings. And I didn't give a shit about anything God had to say because I felt like God had done these things to me. He had taken everything from me, which wasn't the case. I was in a bad place and I was angry. But that death woke me up to the fact that I'm going to die too. It's a deadly disease. Unless, because there's an unless, I do the work. So what did I do? I got on the phone with the old sponsor I used to have from Texas that used to tell it like it was, whether it was going to hurt my feelings or anything else. I started doing inventories left, right, and center. I started doing all this stuff that I stopped doing because I needed a spiritual solution. I needed something. And what I had been doing wasn't working. Now, while all this is going on, my daughter is trying to commit suicide. Life is happening around me, but the difference at this point in time in my recovery is I'm okay. No matter what's happening around me, I'm okay. Because I got God again. I got the path cleared up. I realized that God hadn't done any of it. I had. And life got really good again. Even with all that stuff going on. And don't get me wrong, those things were traumatic and not, I don't want them happening. But because I was able to trust God, I actually got to a place with my daughter trying to kill herself that I was able to say, "God, if it's your will that she be with you and not me, give me the strength to get through it." Now, it didn't start there. Believe me, it didn't start there. But I had to get to that place. And then all of a sudden, while I'm on my knees, God fixed this because I had tried everything humanly possible. Everything started lining up. She got the help she needed. She got switched in the classroom. She wasn't being bullied anymore. All this stuff was going on that was good stuff happening. And short and the long of it is, today, my life is filled with people that love me. I have friends all over the world. I mean, I had an experience, a woman in this room drove me to the World Convention back in March, I think it was. March, May, I don't know.
Last year.
Yeah, it was last year. But anyways, we went to the World Convention in Montreal, and I made friends in Scotland. I have a place to stay in Scotland. The minute my daughter and I get tickets, we're going, they want me to speak, it's going to be great. I've got friends in California, I've got friends all over the world. Because we all have the same problem. We are alcoholics and addicts. Today I've made friends in this room, friends and family. If you guys ever need something, you can reach out to me on Facebook or take my phone number tonight. I will do my best to be helpful. My daughter absolutely knows that I'm going to be there for her through whatever happens in life. This program is working for her because at that time when things were falling apart, we started praying and meditating, her and I. She joined me in that practice, which has helped her so much. Sometimes she'll look at me and she'll go, Mom, I need to do some calming time. She's 13, but she's got some developmental delays, so she's more like a 7 or 8 year old. And she'll sit there doing her calming time. That's because of this program. Because prior to this program, I didn't understand prayer. I didn't understand meditation. I learned about it in church years ago, but it was a different version. Today, my family trusts me. When I say I'm going to be somewhere, I end up there on time. To the point tonight, I was like an hour and a half early. Gord's like, you're really early. I'm like, yeah, well, rather be on time than late. Because I was always late for everything in the past. Or I'd get there, I'd cause a fight so I could leave to go get high and drunk again. I don't do that today. My sister calls me all the time. My amends to my sister was beautiful in the sense of she said, I just want you to be here. I go have dinner with her at least once every 2 weeks now. She lives about 45 minutes from me. But I make a point of doing that because that's what she asked of me in the amends process. And how hard is it to be a sister? You know, it used to be really hard. Now I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. I didn't want to go spend time with my sister. Now I look forward to those things. You know, my mom, when I got sober, didn't trust me at all. I had stolen a lot of money from that woman. About 3 years into my recovery, she handed me her bank card to go pay for something. And I was like, are you sure, Mom? She's like, you're not the same person today that you were then. My dad isn't afraid he's going to get the phone call like he did that time I was in a merge. He knows that I'm safe. And he's excited to talk to me about the ways my life is going. I started a business. It's just all these amazing things have happened. But I didn't do any of that. God did. God does these things because I show up and do the work. But if I'm not willing to do the work, I can kiss all that goodbye. Now, not saying that just because I do the work, again, life is going to be all golden and butterflies. The difference is when I'm in my third step, I realize that life is none of my business. Absolutely none of my business. So I might want a certain situation to be a certain way. And I can pray for that, I guess, but the big book advises against that. They say don't pray for yourself. But the outcome is none of my business. The thing about it today is even if the outcome goes totally different than how I would have wanted it, I know that it was God's plan, not mine. And because I'm in my third step saying, thy will, not mine, it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. Exactly. And I don't have to always like it. I don't 90% of the time, but I take the steps you guys taught me. And by being in the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12, where I'm doing spot check inventory and I'm doing my evening review and I'm getting up upon awakening and planning my day ahead with my higher power, life goes really smoothly. It's high class problems. Like, I think my biggest problem this week was like my hair wasn't right for you guys today. Woo-hoo. My biggest problem in the past is I didn't know where I was going to, and I have problems, don't get me wrong, but nothing compared to what they used to be. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm grateful for CA. There's three parts of the triangle: service, unity, recovery. I know some of the members in here are part of all of them. You guys clearly have the unity piece because you've got this meeting, you've got fellowship, you've got people in your life. Make sure you're involved in the service and the recovery piece. Recovery is steps 1 through 12. 12 is a step. Not service. Sponsorship is not service. And I had to be taught that. That's why I say it to you guys. But it's important to be in all of them because if you have a tripod and you're really heavy in the service, but you're not really doing the step work and you're not going to the meetings and being involved in fellowship, you got a one-legged tripod and you can interchange any of those. What happens to a one-legged tripod?
Falls.
Exactly. Good job, Mike.
Thank you.
You are in the right place. I love it. And that's just it, right? It falls. We got to be on all three legs, service, union, recovery. You don't have to be heavy in them, but you got to be involved in them. And because I was involved in service at a very young age in recovery, I know people. I've been all over the province of Ontario. I've spoken in Barrie. I spoke in Montreal at the World Convention. Like, I was on the main stage, but at one of the meetings, somebody had somebody bail out. And last minute, she's like, you're speaking. Okay. How can I be of service? Because when I'm in service to you guys and other people, I'm not focused on me and my selfishness. The minute I'm not into service of other people, my selfishness is going to show up no matter how sober I am. Selfish and self-centered to the core. That's our problem today. And how do we get out of that? Trust God, clean house, help others. I was going to give you guys a quote out of the Big Book, but I don't think I'm going to do that today. I just want to say to you, everybody in this room, no matter where you're at in your recovery, you honestly, and some people hate this word, but our Big Book says God wants us to be happy, joyous, and free. So I say you deserve a good life. God wants that for you. Or higher power or divine or source, whatever you call it. Don't get turned off by me saying God, but just wants that for you so bad. But you got to do the step work to clear the path. Because if it was God got and kept us sober, the Big Book would be one page that said God gets and keeps us sober. It's not. There's 164 pages of work there we got to do. And again, you don't have to do it. You can stick this under a coffee table and go about it. End up like me 3 years ago, a complete mess, should have been high, probably dead again. I mean, what sane person has been dead before and puts themselves in a position where they're not going to do the simple things that you guys all taught me to do?
This person right here.
Right? And you're not alone in that. None of us are. But the beautiful thing is, life can be good. We don't have a choice whether we're going to use again or whether or not. It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. Because we will, if we don't take the necessary steps. But we do have a choice today is to pick up the spiritual tools. To pray, to meditate. And we have a choice not to, too. But the end result of that is things like what happened to my friend. Death. And it can be a slow, painful death, too. I've seen that in a lot of people. A lot of our friends have relapsed and not come back. And hopefully, none of you guys will be the next funeral somebody has to attend. Because we don't want that for any of you. We love you all so much. And I'm so grateful for each and every one of you. Thank you. Until we meet again, lean in to get soulful. Thank you for meeting me soul to soul today on the Soulful Podcast. If this episode connected with you and you feel called to, please share it with your friends and family so they can feel the love as well. Also, don't forget to hit subscribe on your podcast player so you get notified when new episodes drop. Please leave a rating and comment so I know what's touching your soul the most and can bring you more of what you long for. If you have suggestions for topics or would like me to speak at your event, please connect with me at soulfullsobriety@gmail.com. Thank you for your love and support in helping me connect with more souls to remind them they are divine, capable, and loved. You're the best. Go out looking at the world through the lens of love.